Today's gospel is from John 18, 28 through 40. Then they took Jesus from Caiaphas to Pilate's headquarters. It was early in the morning. They themselves did not enter the headquarters so as to avoid ritual defilement and to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered, "If this man were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him according to your law." The Jews replied, "We are not permitted to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill what Jesus had said when he indicated the kind of death he was to die. Then Pilate entered the headquarters again, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate replied, "I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." Pilate asked him, "So are you a king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Pilate asked him, "What is truth?" After he had said this, he went out to the Jews again and told them, "I find no case against him. But you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" They shouted in reply, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a bandit. The word of the Lord.
Truth and power. I kind of wanted to make it seem like I had those tattooed on my knuckles. But I guess with truth and power, I'd have to get my thumbs involved, and what would that look like? I don't know. Truth and power. Truth and power walk hand in hand. The one who knows the truth holds the power. Knowledge is power. You know the truth, you have the power. You can gain the power. Truth is power. But what if the knowledge you have is that the truth doesn't need to correspond with what is true? The knowledge that the most powerful tool one has in gaining power is that the truth must be determined by what corresponds with one's own agenda. Only after this understanding of truth is asserted can any power grabber make an appeal to the truth. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying? Does this feel true to you? There it is. Post-truth in a concise six-word question. Does this feel true to you? Even better, the three-word declaration that is virtually unarguable. It feels true. It feels true. I don't know. It feels true to me. Does it feel true to you? Of course it does, or I wouldn't be asking the question. And even if it doesn't feel completely true now, the question will tickle a little part of you that wants whatever it is to be true. And when I say it again, you'll feel a little bit more like it's true. And when I say it again, that feeling will be right out there in the open where you can feel it, which is not usually where your feelings are. And the feeling will be clear and uncomplicated, which is not usually how your feelings are. And after I repeat whatever it is that I want to be true over and over and over again, when I ask you, does it feel true? You will, with deep feeling, answer, lock her up. Not my president. Or just a good old-fashioned hell yeah. Yes. The mechanics of truth in a post-truth era. While the post-truth epoch we are slogging through is largely seen to have been ushered in by our current president, it is really, obviously, so much older than that. It can easily be traced back all the way to George W. Bush. No, I'm kidding, of course. I'm kidding. It's been around much, much longer than that. But it did feel true, didn't it? While the term post-truth is found in other rhetorical arenas, it is most usually talked about in the political arena. The hallmarks of post-truth rhetoric, according to the failing New York Times, are its appeals to emotion disconnected from policy details. For instance, I can make a claim about some scary threat to our democracy, like a complete collapse of our economy will come about if we abandon the gold standard, even though the U.S. left the gold standard in 1971. Then you must repeat the assertions of the talking points to which a factual rebuttal has been made and ignored. Maybe the dollar is no longer tied to the price of an ounce of gold, and maybe it is. All I know is when the economy starts to collapse, you're going to wish otherwise. And that's the truth. This Sunday on the church calendar, it carries the title Christ the King Sunday. It always comes at the end of the church year. Next Sunday, we start the new church year with the Advent season, the 4 weeks looking forward to Christmas, the incarnation of God, the Redeemer of all creation as a helpless infant. I don't know to what extent the authors of the church here named Christ the King Sunday ironically. I mean, they certainly were aware of the ironic potential. They must be when they chose this reading in John. It's the story of Jesus being sentenced to death and rejected by the people. The characters in the story seem to be throwing that title around ironically. The religious leaders first charged Jesus with blasphemy, saying he claimed that he was one with God. But they knew the Romans would care less about some claim that he was equal with the God of the Jews. So they reported that he had claimed to be the King of the Jews, because that was a political title that would cause him some trouble. Caesar is the King of the Jews. Caesar is the King of all the peoples in his empire. His power is absolute and cannot be challenged. The crime carries a death sentence, and the religious leaders wanted him dead. They bring Jesus to Pilate, and Pilate takes one look at him and does not take the religious leaders' charge seriously at all. He tells them to get Jesus out of there. But they convince Pilate to question him and to judge him. Pilate asks him a simple yes or no question that will get this over very quickly. Are you the King of the Jews? Yes or no? But Jesus is a rabbi, and they really don't do yes or no. He answers, do you ask this on your own, or did others tell you about me? What? Pilate says. Am I a Jew? Of course someone else told me about you. You know, it's like you, your chief priests and your people, they handed you over to me. Then Jesus asks, what did you do? Like, then he asks Jesus, what did you really do? What did you really do? Because Pilate says, clearly, you're no threat to Rome. You're no king. There's nobody going to mistake you for a king. But clearly, you did something to scare those chief priests. They want you dead. Jesus tells him, you're right. Jesus tells him, you are right. I'm no threat to Rome's kingdom. My kingdom is not from this world. I don't have any armies to fight against you. I didn't even fight off the religious leaders when they arrested me. So are you saying you are some kind of king? No, Jesus says, you're saying I'm some kind of king. I'll tell you what I am. I was born into this world to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice.
What is truth? Pilate asks dismissively.
Pilate is thinking, well, the truth is that I am tasked with eliminating threats to Rome and keeping the peace of Rome. This guy is for sure no threat, but the religious leaders really want him dead. So let me see what the truth is today. Pilate sticks his head out and to address the crowd that is gathered. How about I release this King of the Jews guy? And the crowd erupts. Release someone else. Kill Jesus. Okay, Pilate thinks, that's the truth. It feels true that Jesus is a threat to the peace of Rome. So execution it is. Maybe this is a kind of post-truth, even if it is more pragmatic than provocative. Or maybe it's not really what you'd call post-truth as much as it is like a redefining the truth in favor of the desired outcome. Because Rome is not a democracy, and when you have absolute power, you have absolute power to declare truth. So it's not truth the way Roman philosophers defined it. It's just the truth of power. See, Roman philosophers define truth, in Latin veritas, as a factual representation of reality. But a dictator can dictate what is real. When Jesus is talking to Pilate, when Jesus tells him that he has no interest in challenging the Roman kingdom, and when I say that he has no interest in power, but has come to bear witness to the truth, Jesus is not even trying to challenge the Roman idea of right or wrong, of truth or falsity, of what is just and unjust in the Roman law. Jesus is not interested in addressing any Roman idea about anything at all. When Jesus says, I have come to bear witness to the truth, he is not referring to the Roman understanding of the truth, the factual representation of reality. Jesus is using truth in the Hebrew sense. The Hebrew word for truth is emeth, and it means something like God's faithfulness, but in a deeply relational way. It's a kind of knowing rooted in relationship with God, relationship with the Creator, the faithfulness of the Creator to the creation. We know that kind of truth in that we experience it. When Jesus is saying to Pilate, my kingdom is not from this world, he's saying my kingdom looks beyond this world. My kingdom looks beyond Rome or Jerusalem or any power of this world. I've come into this world to bear witness to something beyond your laws or truths, or lies, beyond all your pretenses of power. I have come to bear witness to the truth. I have come to proclaim God's faithfulness, which draws us all in. The truth, this truth, is more like a call than a black and white command. It's a call to come into relationship with that truth. It steps over the machinations of power games, however they are played, and invites us to live in the truth and to be set free.